Good morning. I'll reconvene the hearing. I don't need to introduce us. There's no one new in the room.
You seem to have scared everyone off.
Yes.
Can't imagine why.
Just before you start, we understand from Ms. Chalmers that Mr. Glasner is ill. It occurs to us that the questions we have of him are really factual questions, and we'd be happy to just have those responded to in writing, if that would be more convenient.
Well, that's appreciated, sir. Obviously, we can't control Mr. Glasner's state of health. It is quite nasty. He is also scheduled to be on leave until Monday the 14th, so quite apart from his illness today, he isn't available for the rest of the week. I think that approach would work very well, and if there are any subsequent issues you wanted to test them on, you could always be recalled and led by either Ms. Barr or Ms. Scott or myself in return.
I haven't checked with Commissioner Gilmore, but there's probably three questions.
Well,
I might have a fourth, I must be reading.
Yes, it's probably not worth getting him in for that level of discussion, I suspect. Yes. Yeah.
Well, that's appreciated. He has no book, so there's a slot, possibly,
I just think it might be more convenient if we were to set out questions maybe during the luncheon adjournment. It would be useful, I think, if his answers were available on the website before other parties were heard on the 1B matters, just so that they'd have the opportunity to comment on them, even though they're only factual matters.
So that was your hearings are reconvening Monday afternoon.
Well, actually Thursday. Thursday in Wanaka has been one of these starts. Yeah.
Right. We'll communicate with Mr. Glasner and attempt to turn that around for you.
Okay.
Thank you very much for your consideration. Yeah. The lineup today then in the proposed order is Dr. McDermott to deal with centres matters, then Mr. Pickard on chapters 1 and 5, then Mr. Barr and Mr. Cates, if that's satisfactory. So unless there's any other preliminary matters, there is a preliminary matter, and that was related to a question from Commissioner Robinson about case law. My learned friend Mr. Goldsmith weighed in late yesterday and advised that he has dealt with the issue in his legal submissions as to the case law reference dealing with the exclusion of concept of openness from visual amenity landscape, and that's dealt with in his legal submissions, and I understand that it is correctly recorded in there. So that deals with that particular matter, and
Before you go on, Mr. Winchester, I think I had in fact read Mr. Goldsmith's submissions on that point. My question to you is not so much what the Environment Court said, but rather what implications what the Environment Court said in 1999 has for our deliberations now, given that staff are recommending at least recognition of, to some extent, of openness in rural landscapes. So you might care to give that one some thought.
Well, I can answer that, and my response is that it's part of the history and the context. You know, you've heard direct evidence from Dr. Reid about the merits of that approach and the relevance of the concept of openness in terms of rural character, and she has also talked about the effectiveness of visual amenity landscapes as a management tool. So, in my submission, it's context, but we've moved on. It's now 16 years later, and there how that approach has been implemented and the success. And in my submission, that is more relevant and deserves more weight than the findings of the Environment Court back in 1999.
Thank you for that.
Thank you. Could Dr. McDermott? We propose the same approach. Dr. McDermott has a short summary of the evidence which you'll read out and be available to answer any questions.
Sir, Mr. Winchett, do we have a copy of the summary to follow?
No, we'll provide those in a complete package. Right. Yeah, we're really just gathering them together.
Thank you.
I won't say they've been produced in dribs and drabs, but...
But it is.
But they are.
Certainly. Called off to me, Tim.
Good morning. My evidence deals with the strategic approach taken by the Council, centres in the proposed district plan, and with the objectives and policies intended to pursue goal 3.2.1.1, developing a prosperous, resilient and equitable economy. In particular, I consider how strategic provisions for commercial, including retail centres, and business land in the district might help to achieve this goal. In this summary, I'll take you through the background of commercial land supply and explain the rationale for expanding Queenstown Town Centre. I'll also touch on the relevant strategic objectives, including some reference to Arrowtown and Wanaka. In my opinion, the proposed district plan, as amended in the Section 42A report, recognises and supports the current and future roles of the main commercial centres in the district. The Queenstown Town Centre, Franklin, Wanaka and Arrowtown. The objectives provide for the recognition of the distinctive nature of the commercial areas and allow for their growth to happen in a way that meets residents' and businesses' needs alike and is most likely to support a prosperous, resilient and equitable economy. Let's talk to the background a little. I became involved in the proposed district plan as a result of a peer review I did for the Council in 2014, reviewing a 2013 study undertaken by Ms. Herbert Miller Strategies and Allen Research and Planning. Just by way of background, while there was a company called the Herbert Miller Group that basically closed down and closed, if you want to call it you, some 35 years ago.
Couldn't hear from detail, no distraction.
35 years ago, and I hadn't had any dealings at all with what became called the Herbert Miller Strategies. In fact, that my name is still on contention at the time, but it's history. So it was a totally independent review. My review is included as Appendix A of my statement of evidence. The McDermott Miller Strategies report was commissioned by the Council to assist with the district plan review because of an apparent overprovision of commercial land in the mixed-use area of Franklin, or areas of Franklin. This was seen to result from ad hoc and piecemeal planning. The McDermott Miller Strategies report was also required to propose a policy structure that enables more effective management and integration of those zones. The report quantified current and future supply and demand using several growth scenarios which reflected different rates of tourism growth, and it confirmed considerable oversupply of commercially zoned land even under optimistic growth assumptions. More than that, the report highlighted the importance of tourism to the future of Queenstown. Promoting tourism as a driver of growth that seemed to be closely tied to the need to expand and revitalise the Queenstown town centre. The subsequent Martin Jenkins Limited Economic Development Strategy report prepared for the Council endorsed this view. I'd like to turn to the individual goals underneath the objectives 3.2.1.1. These goals, I suggest, and the policies underlie follow directly from the findings of the two aforementioned reports. The report also suggested that the McDermott Miller Strategies report also suggested that space constraints on the Queenstown Town Centre had led to the expansion of commercial and retail land capacity elsewhere, especially in Franklin, and mainly as a result of private plan changes. The report saw this as a threat to the expansion of Queenstown town centre, which would in turn stymie tourism growth. The oversupply of land in Frankton was also seen as potentially prejudicing development in Wanaka, where commercial pressures were already emerging. The policy response that was suggested is the only area in which I disagreed with the McMillan strategy report. In the view of these conclusions, it was suggested that the proposed business policy framework should be based on sustaining a district-wide retail hierarchy. In theory, this could be used to regulate where and when investment might take place in terms of where within that hierarchy a particular centre sits. In practical terms, this might mean that any further expanding of Queenstown town centre would be at the cost of Frankton. We're trying to compensate for the current excess of zoned commercial land in Queenstown might lead to denying the expansion of commercial land around the town centre. Instead, I took from the analysis and the data the fact that the centres in practice play significantly different roles and that the development of any one centre should not be treated as contingent on the others. Rather, it should be seen as a response to a particular set of factors driving its growth. So in my view, an appropriate policy framework, I suggested, is one that seeks to recognise and accommodate the functional differences and strengths of the two centres, the town centre and Frankton, rather than seeing them as closely and intimately related and requiring policies at one level in the hierarchy that affect centres in the other. Based on that work, I moved on to look at the rationale for expanding Queenstown town centre. I was asked to explore this in support of or to examine the merits of rezoning the area immediately to the north of the existing centre, subject to Plan Change 50. This is contained in my statement as Appendix B. My analysis, Plan Change 50 provides mixed-use development to allow, among other things, additional tourism accommodation, hot pools and a convention centre. It is consistent with the initiatives proposed for lifting the rate of growth of tourism underpinning the McDermott-Miller strategies and growth scenarios. It also provides the opportunity to increase residential capacity close to the town centre. I was asked in particular to examine the difference between commercial development in Frankton and Queenstown and the town centre, and that report is attached to September attachment B in my evidence. It's a report of the rationale for extending mixed-use zoning into the area covered by Plan Change 50. I look closely at the composition of growth and growth of employment and the character of investment as indicated by building consents and in both Frankton and Queenstown at the town centre. I concluded again that while both provide for local convenience retailing, their differences are much more significant than their similarities. Briefly, retailing in Queenstown town centre is focused on goods and services directed mainly to the individual and particularly those that cater to visitors. The format is typically small footprint, pedestrian-oriented and specialist shops with a degree of niche brand focusing. In contrast, retailing in Frankton is predominantly geared towards household demand, notably large format stores with chain store affiliation and chain store branding, and organised for ease of vehicle access. If we look beyond the retailing functions of these centres, the town centre focuses on accommodation on and beyond the fringes, obviously, hospitality, tourist activities such as passenger transfer operations, equipment hire, booking offices and the like. It also, of course, provides higher order office services and is the administrative and cultural centre for the district. If we look beyond retailing in Frankton, it accommodates in particular the development and construction centre, builders, suppliers and yards, trade depots, fabrication factories, aluminium, and so forth, provides engineering and similar industrial services. And through its retail centres, it also provides a range of services to households, medical services, bars, cafes, health and fitness, real estate and the like. It also, obviously, it provides a lot of services to transport, the airport being part of that. That particular analysis and attachment B I updated earlier this year in preparation for Environment Court hearing of the Plan Change 50. Based on that update, I conclude that between 2013 and 2015, the distances between the two centres actually increased. and that's despite the growth and the significant growth of retail capacity in the manufacturing in that time. With respect to objective 3.2.1.1 and 3.2.1.2, I remain firmly of the opinion that while some activities overlap, those two centres should be planned on the basis of their distinctive individual circumstances and roles. Objective 3.2.1.2 supports the integrated development of the wider Frankton mixed use area, so it might encompass the existing developments and provide capacity for ongoing expansion as the population and local economy grow. Objective 3.2.1.3 by memory includes the additional other centres. So for this present hearing, I extended my analysis to include Wanaka and Arrowtown. With respect to Wanaka, there are three features that stand out. The first is the dominance of visitor-oriented activity in the modest town centre retail area. I use the word modest, meaning it's not a Wanaka, it's not a Queenstown, but it's very similar in terms of having the centre heavily devoted to visitor activity. The second feature is the rapid nature of recent population tourism growth there. And the third is the relative dearth or absence of retail floor space per head, as identified in the McDermott Miller Strategies Report, which suggests significant leakage into Queenstown and particularly into Franklin. The focus of the proposed plan on developing a centre of Wanaka for the visitor industry is appropriate, although capacity there appears constrained. With respect to further commercial and industrial activity in Wanaka, it is important that the objective is carried through in support of existing plans for light industry, transport and storage, and additional retailing to serve local needs and population growth, that includes the three parks and the board road developments. Objective 3.2.1.3 is also relevant to Arrowtown. Even more than in the larger towns, the centre of Arrowtown is dominated by visitor-focused hospitality and highly specialised retail functions. Given its character and significance as a distinctive attraction in its own right, it does make sense to avoid any planning decisions that might undermine these functions. However, there may well be a need in the future to support modest additional commercial activity right here in the township to meet local needs. While arguing against the rigidities and potential distortions of placing a hierarchy of centres through the political plan, it is important to recognise the growth of the tourism and hence development of the two town centres, Queenstown and Wanaka, to recognise their importance to the area's population growth, while acknowledging the prospect of absorbing much commercial and industrial capacity in Franklin. Continuing to reinforce those differences is probably the most likely way to sustain the area's growth. There's also the last objective I address is 3.2.1.5, which is about encouraging diversification of the district's economic base. From a strategic point of view, this is a central objective arising from the Martin Jenkins report and its promotion of knowledge-based industry. The wider issue here, though, is to ensure that there is adequate capacity for diverse and innovative investments, the nature of which we cannot predict, but which may well generate significant income and employment in the future. The objective and underlying policies are general in nature. I take them as ensuring that investment opportunities are not curtailed by over-prescriptive policies that place limits on activity other than those that might be associated with potential adverse effects. Recent growth in production activities, other than those related directly to tourism, has taken place mainly in Frankton. I expect this to continue both in response to the needs of a growing population in response to new forms of investment that might accompany such growth. And as an aside, as this population grows, the opportunities for quite innovative and new investment may well arise. We have a changing demographic dynamic, changing economic dynamic, simply as a result of this population growth. And the argument I'm making is that we have to have that flexibility to allow something that we can't even anticipate to happen. New industries and activities. At the same time, Frankton continues to be the main location for such light industrial activity, the objective as presented offers sufficient flexibility that such investment should not be precluded in other parts of the district. So keeping an open mind with respect to light industry innovative type investment and where and how it might happen. And if we look back on the tourism industry been that innovative approach to tourism product that largely underpins its quite spectacular success. Thank you. I'm happy to answer any questions.
Thank you, Dr. McDermott. I'd just like to ask you, have you ever actually been to Wanaka and examined the centre there?
Yes.
I'm just looking at your paragraph 4.17 on page 9. And you say in the second sentence, the retailing is, apart from clothing and sports goods, consists of a pharmacy and a single convenience store. Ever since I've lived there, there's been two pharmacies in town. My latest count, there were three or four convenience stores, and there's a supermarket
within the
town centre of Wanaka.
I think I'm effective on the main street looking out towards the lake, so for that I acknowledge what you're saying.
Well, I mean, if we only dealt with the main street looking on the lake here, we'd actually only have Eichardt's Hotel. I don't think that we can limit the town centre just to that. And I'm wondering also whether you were aware of the retail activities in Anderson Heights.
I didn't visit Anderson Heights.
No.
Okay.
And I'm just wondering, when you talk about leaving local retailing confined to primarily residential areas, I'm just wondering what you're referring to there.
I think at that point I was thinking of the Golf Course Road development. My visit to Wanaka, my last visit to Wanaka, which was only a month ago, I didn't spend a lot of time. I had done earlier, and I had done some. I didn't go to Anderson Heights. I was thinking of Gordon Road, Golf Course Road, and I guess I've been scratching my memory hard now.
Okay. Turning to the so-called Frankton mixed-use area, isn't that really an agglomeration of several centres rather than a single centre?
Yes, I don't get any point. I think my point was that, and I support the objective that's been introduced in this one, that there's some degree of integration required, and that's taking place partly through transport, and it's raising transport issues. I think there's a tendency to, given the overcapacity, that different centres compete with each other. In the long run, I see them all coming together to create a regional retail presence. The fact that there's competition there, and perhaps overcapacity at the moment, simply calls for careful planning. It doesn't call for any changing of any curtailing, if you like. But what's happening is calls for its integration. I don't have any problem with the fact that it's quite a dispersed area at present.
I was wondering how integrated they can become, given the airport lies smack bang between two halves, and then at the other end the golf course separates the retail area around the corner of where the state highway turns to go down to the bridge.
I don't think integrated necessarily means that they must be contiguous. I think we're talking about the transport links which need addressing in particular, and recognising that there will be complementary uses, that there will be trade, there will be industrial, there will be retail uses in a similar area. Managing and planning for that does not mean that all the retailers should be together, for example. I think I said it in motion that you might master plan the whole area to get some coordination of transport and service and development and perhaps even landscaping. would give rise to integration and coherence of the whole. That doesn't mean the fact that the spatial separation, there's a lot of transport-oriented activity around the airport, isn't a barrier to that, achieving that. We have what we have that can make it work better. Transport plays a larger part.
I'm just trying to think of the nearest concept I can come to is Fashion Valley in San Diego, where there's a dispersed series of centres linked by a freeway. I mean, that's the sort of integration that they may be separate centres, but the transport links somehow is the integration. Is that what you're referring to?
Transport's important, particularly given and the transport links internally and externally, given likely future growth of population in the vicinity. I mean, the catchment around that whole Franklin area is growing quite rapidly. Therefore, transport links are critical. I think a sense of, and I'm thinking almost in landscape terms, what coherence can be brought about by good landscape planning. Not just the roads, but the way the roads look, the way they operate. Some transitional areas between industry and retailing, which all exist as parts of the services provided, the light services. There's a lot of auto services, the boat services there, whether they come closer to the retail areas in the due course. But I think I'm mainly talking, perhaps at a superficial level, because growth will occur there anyway, and it's making sure that they haven't good rise to more.
Can I ask a related question, please? Transport, I'm a cyclist and I live in that area, and what's your perspective in terms of the non-vehicular transport routes and the necessity thereof? Because you've got the high school moving out there, you've got supermarkets in different places, you've got some cycleways at the moment that they're pretty formally planned. In terms of what this district plan is trying to do in terms of encouraging public transport and non-vehicular, should that also be part of your master plan?
The moment you begin master planning, or structure planning, is non-vehicular access ways. And in this case, linking to the access ways between subdivisions of Lake Hayes right through to Queenstown, and the opportunity then provided against a network of non-pedestrian ways within the Franklin area.
And how much of a hindrance is Stadoway 6A in terms of providing that when you've got a primary school on one side, a secondary school on the other, and population bases on both?
I don't think that's significant, but I haven't addressed how you've resolved that. I believe that transport issues in the area generally will become more significant. I do need addressing, and I would accept, particularly talking in terms of integrating those centres, that pedestrian cycleways are part of the solution.
Thank you. Your description of Frankton in your objective 32122 seems to miss out Frankton Corner, which is the historic part of Frankton. It says comprising Remarkless Park, Queenstown Airport, and 5 Mile. Is that an omission?
Which paragraph is that?
Objective, the first one with regard to Frankton. Recognise, develop, sustain and integrate the key mixed-use function of the wider Frankton commercial area comprising Remarkables Park, Queenstown Airport and 5 Mile.
Commissioner Gilmore.
I've flipped to strategic direction, sorry.
Yes, he's referring to objective 3212.
Thank you.
As my colleague here
points out, it's also Shotover Park, Glenda Drive, Queenstown Event Centre. So I'm wondering if comprising is perhaps the wrong word, maybe including, and whether planners might want to suggest whether some others are important enough to include. in there. Also on the last page 17 of your evidence, you say in 5.4, quality can be achieved through the design of key infrastructure components, particularly roads and road reserves, provisions for recreational reserves, quality of landscaping built form, and ease of movement within an area. You have already talked of the roading aspects. I'm not sure how much attention you may have paid to other parts of the plan. Is your feeling that generally those other aspects are being looked at strongly enough to ensure that?
I haven't looked at them, I'm afraid. That's a general point.
Okay. You say, or no, this is your review, I think. Your 31st January 2014 review on page 11 under land for accommodation. You say land for accommodation is excluded because of the currently low occupancy rates, 50%. That has changed substantially since January 2014, and it's now kind of in the 80s and above for most of the year. Taking that into mind, is there enough thought put in within the plan to accommodation needs, having heard what you said about PC 50 area also including some VA and some residential?
I'd make the point that that was citing the Miller report, which is looking at purely historical data. Again, somewhere I've addressed the point that you made, that we've had rapid growth in the last 4 years, and occupancy rates are becoming significantly higher for longer than a year. And I believe it's urgent that that be addressed. I haven't examined the rest of the plan, how that is addressed in stage two, but I see it as underpinning the strategic goal that we're dealing with, and I certainly see it as adding urgency to the move on the PC50 land. I mean, one of the issues, and I haven't looked closely at it, but I do raise it, is that there's been very little new investment in hotel capacity at the same time as hotel demand has been growing. So we end up, if we're not careful, the product that's put out of step with the market as well. So I think it's an urgent issue. I understand that would be an initial step would be taken in resolving that issue with PC.
Thank you.
Commissioner Cox, do you have any questions or documents?
Yes, thanks. Just back at your paragraph 4.13, you just mentioned the previous question about the report you referred to obviously being updated. Some of the information there that you've got, are the figures to support that, the dependent on domestic market versus international market, the portion of retirees among resident households and that?
I had suggested it may be accounted for. I haven't done those analyses.
Okay.
So I'll just go. It is an unusually high figure. While there may be leakage to, sorry, an unusually low figure, and I'm assuming it's correct, while there may be significant leakage to Frankton, that surprises me, and that's why I raised the fact that there may be other reasons.
Is it possible that the leakage is not to Frankton, but to Dunedin, Christchurch, and possibly Cromwell?
I can't answer that question, but I would imagine that as in all retail economics, the further you go, the smaller the leakage, in Frankton being the most significant nearby sub-regional or regional retail centre would be the most obvious destination. Some of it will obviously be.
That would be Cromwell. That would be Cromwell then.
Cromwell. My knowledge of Cromwell recently, it's not got the same retail mass as Frankton, and that plays a significant role.
It's got some cheap shops.
Yeah. Price is often a factor. I mean, if the supermarket is more expensive, you go to the cheaper one, the cheaper one's in Dunedin.
I haven't modelled it, but I think the retail modelling would show that I'd be very, very surprised if the majority of
leakage
wasn't
strength. I understand retail modelling, as you know.
Just back to your, sorry, I might have missed it. You started talking about Arrowtown. Were you suggesting we should be, Arrowtown should be recognised more in some of the objective or policies part of the?
It's recognised in the objective I referred to about as well, which is a fairly general objective.
Simply reference by exception. Mm-hmm. It's more reference by exception, isn't it? Because it's saying centres outside of Frankton,
yes,
Wanaka, and, yeah, and Arrowtown. So it doesn't actually specify Arrowtown, it's just a,
no, it doesn't.
An exclusion.
Arrowtown and Queenstown and Wanaka. I'm sorry, Arrowtown is.
It's Frankton, Queenstown, and Wanaka. The ones outside of those.
I think what I'm really saying is that objective, by looking at Arrowtown, it provides some flexibility. To address the issues of small communities. I think Arrowtown justifies some consideration in terms of the flexibility and the capacity to provide additional retail that might be greater than that. Or a supermarket.
Thank you.
So can we just go that further a little bit? So it deserves some recognition. Can you suggest what recognition might be an improvement?
Again, I haven't gone to that particular stage, but looking at the growth of Arrowtown in the immediate environment and the fact that it's one very small supermarket and a convenience school, I hope I can miss me out this time.
No, you're right.
Suggests to me that there would be pressure for additional locally oriented retail. I see some flexibility in the approach taken by Fran to provide for that.
Commissioner Couch-Lewis, do you have any
questions?
Okay. Commissioner Cox, do you have
any questions?
Dr. McDermott, can we start by getting a little clearer about when we talk about Queenstown Town Centre, what exactly are we talking about?
I've addressed it at two levels. Queenstown Town Centre is basically covered in my second attachment. The area adjoining, the precinct adjoining and contiguous areas with the lake. So it's this area here. Queenstown Central I've treated as including two sister area units, Queenstown Hills and Queenstown Bay. I've focused my assessment on the need to expand Queenstown Town Centre. My analysis, which I compared with Frankton, is that confined area. The lakefront. He illustrated up and put it to the map.
Sorry, Carol.
If you go to the second attachment, please. If you go to the second attachment, page 4, figure 1.
Can you give me that page number again, please?
Page 4.
So what's the name of that report? Sorry, mine doesn't say
that's the
chapter number it is.
Case for zoning additional commercial space in Queenstown Town Centre. In that instance,
so to my eye, what you've labelled Queenstown Town Centre here is a larger area than the area which is zoned Town Centre. Is that correct? Or is that something I should ask the planner?
No,
it's
Queenstown Town Centre. I tried to comply with a zoning system. It reaches into Board Drive. But yellow area, which is the can change 50 area.
Fortunately for us, we can ignore that because that's not part of our plan. And the area that I'm focusing on is that your town centre seems to go some distance along Lakefront Lake. So, for instance, just to orientate myself, where we are sitting right here, is that within your town centre? Thank you for that.
Does it go as far as 1 mile, what you're suggesting? It kind of looks like 1 mile because it's opposite the
peninsula. That second little bit, additional sense of a mesh box being brought in, yes. I think that does, I can't say for sure. It extends along the front.
And it goes down to around about the school, along Gorge. And then
it's not as far as the school. Here's the school up there. School's there.
That's an industrial place. The school is.
It's not got to be high school.
Does it? Oh, okay.
Yeah. High school. That's the park. I think it goes to Boundary Road.
Oh, okay. I think you said that's good.
if you could, and could you, and I'm also interested in Wanaka, because we've already had a discussion with our chair as to just where the Wanaka extends beyond Lakefront. And is there a comparable map for Wanaka that you could refer us to?
My work on Wanaka is derived from the Pyramid Strategy, plus some data I pulled together for the census area unit, which is quite.
Well, in that case, can I ask that if you could liaise, please, with Council and give us a clearer map of what is Queenstown Town Centre derived from Figure 1 and a comparable map for Wanaka, so we're clear about what it is exactly you're talking about. The second area I wanted to discuss with you is the description of the different character of the Queenstown Town Centre at Frankton, because if I understand your reasoning correctly, this is a key part of the reason why you disagreed with the Dermot Miller report, that there were effectively that they're complementary. Have I understood that correctly first?
I don't disagree with its substantive conclusions about over capacity for the time being in Franklin, yes. And I agree with it that the growth in the tourism industry depends on increasing the capacity of the town centre, which may mean stretching its boundaries a little bit, some challenges there. What I disagree with is that we can by dealing with a hierarchy of sectors, basically to say if we want Queenstown to expand and grow, we will stop at Hacknell Square, which is not an uncommon approach to planning for retailing. So if we want Queen Street to grow, we're going to stop and expand and do small. I disagree with that approach, because all it does really is amongst those few things, but one of the things it does is protect current owners, landlords, investors, and they don't have to do anything because the plan doesn't for them, protect them, provide them a monopoly. So my argument is we allow the centres to develop as demand and the market and circumstances dictates, subject to our environmental controls and management. One of the consequences of being overprotective is you'll find CBDs begin to decline because landlords don't need to reinvest. For a long time that was Hamilton's problem, for example. So I have a fundamental disagreement that we can plan for Queenstown Town Centre by controlling growth elsewhere. That's
the reason I was going to this point is that I listened carefully to your summary, and indeed your evidence expands on this, about the character, and this is where your evidence merges with the planning position. So So I'll run this past you, and if you want to defer to the planners, I understand that, but we'll just see how we go. You're describing Queenstown, well, the policy describes, as recommended to be changed, describes Queenstown Centre as the key commercial, civic and cultural hub of the district, and the staff suggested policy for Frankton describes it as key mixed use function. And the thing that is rolling around in my mind is that neither actually describes the key elements of the character as you put it. And I wonder if you could assist me how do we capture that? Because to me, mixed use could mean anything.
That's a fair comment, actually. And if we look at mixed use in different plans, it sometimes does. I think it's important that in stage two that be clarified. But I personally, and I may differ from the planners, as opposed to defer them, tend to limit how many uses you exclude from an area. Sometimes that's how we as planners try to resolve the dilemma you're facing. We say, oh, but you can't do this, this, and this. Mixed use should enable light industry. The sorts of things I've identified with Frankton area, large format retailing, maybe in the area. There's a tendency, it may enable retailing, yard-based retailing, which is associated with both trades and households. It obviously involves light industries such as auto services, aluminium, jewellery, whatever, the sorts of things we see in Linden Drive. But there will be some, when I talked about a master plan or structure, there will still be some differentiation to protect, to avoid nuisance, to avoid incompatible use. I think that some mixed use areas will enable housing dwellings. That would be the way the direction I would see Frankton. Well, in terms of the town centre, you start to prevent the light industrial use. You might address in your structure planning and your non-statutory plan different approaches to the landscape, to view the landscape. But I can't go much further. I don't know if that helps you at all.
Well, I think that in terms of Commissioner Gilmore's question, if mixed use includes light industry, then clearly at Frankton it should extend out into, it should comprise the industrial area at the Shotover River end of the flats.
I agree.
And elsewhere in Chapter 4, it describes Queenstown as a tourism and employment hub, and Frankton as supplying local commercial and industrial services. Does that capture it better? Or is that wrong too?
Frankton as a whole provides what I would call district-wide or even regional or sub-regional services, industrial and retail and tertiary services, not travel agents or to a white community. It includes both, and I've made the point that local services and local retailing provide both centres. But that large format retailing, Remarkables Park, Glendon Drive with trade services, these are servicing a district wide catchment.
So local is too confined?
Yes. There will be local services to local catchment, but actually it's too confined to describe the function of Frankton.
But if we were to broaden that and say, for instance, local and district wide commercial industrial services, would that be better capture it than mixed use, which, as I say, to my jaundiced eye, doesn't mean anything actually.
I can't speak for Premier in that respect and what is intended, but to my mind that captures it. And commercial includes retail.
Thank you very much.
Thanks, Dr. McDermott. Can't pretty much ask everything that I was going to cover off. I just had a couple of questions, though. In terms of, have you had the opportunity to look or go through the Section 32 report that relates?
I'm very brief, I'm not familiar enough with it.
And then my question was that you haven't had actual input or that into it in terms of any cost things or any of that. Possibly more for Mr. Winchester, just in terms of that, when we're talking about Section 32 and 32.2 as we were the other day, is that just in relation to the landscape provisions that work's being undertaken, or is it across all the 32s that relate to the, in terms of the submissional work that's being undertaken? Is that included the other chapters?
It's intended to be specifically targeted on the rural chapters, and on the question of the focus on farming as opposed to greater recognition of other uses that may wish to locate in rural areas, and particularly the issues being raised about tourism and express provision for tourism in the rural environment. So that's going to be the focus of that additional economic analysis.
Just before you go, the discussion with Commissioner Robinson about Frankton, I'm just wondering whether, in your view, the use of the term Frankton may just be a little bit amorphous. Is there a way that we can particularise what we're talking about?
I think it would be useful to do so, yes. Yeah. I think reading through the commentary on all the plan changes that I drew out of the Pivot Mirror report, getting familiar with it myself, with the area, including the industrial area and right through, understanding what Frankton Flats and what Frankton, it is a difficult term in itself. I mean, before I became involved in this particular work, Frankton was the end of the end of the lake. Last moved down here probably 10 years ago. And changed a lot. And to understand that, I think it would be useful. And again, I think some sort of master plan exercise would begin to solidify what we're dealing with to get the name.
I'm just wondering if we have a policy, as Mr. Pates is suggesting, whether there should be some map or something showing what it is that the policy relates to, because at the moment, I mean, I'm wondering whether it extends as far as the Carrow Landing area, where the Hilton Hotel is. That part of that Frankton mixed-use area as well.
No, that's government,
yeah. Oh, we can think about that.
Right, so we can draw a limit at the river.
Yes.
But if coming back in towards Queenstown, you've got the roundabout. You don't go very far, and you've got a marina. Well, there's a consent for a marina there and a Shell service station. Is that part of the mixed use area, or is it a finish?
I'm drawing the line on this side of the marina, the roundabout, behind the commercial area, but then I haven't.
Yes, well, that's what I mean. We might need some actual delineation of this, because at the moment, Frankton, in people's minds, extends alongside the lake. And Remarkables Park is never referred to as Frankton.
I would think most locals would think of Frankton as starting at the end of the arm, going up from there to the river that way and the river that way and at the bottom of the hills on that side. So it would be basically the flat contained by the lake and the rivers.
And yes.
I mean, I was using the term Frankton Flats and then I adapted to the place that had a slightly more specific meaning than I was using. So, but the notion of that whole area from the highway being flat offers some indication that it might be.
Okay, thank you, Dr. McDermott.
Mr. Pickard to talk to his officer's reports on chapters 1 and 5.
My name is Anthony Pickard. I'm employed by QLDC as the Principal Planner Infrastructure in the Property and Infrastructure Team. Until 15th of February 2016, I was employed for 2 years as a Senior Policy Planner at QLDC and have authored Chapters 1, Introduction, and Chapters 5, Hanging the Fenua. If I could first of all just bring up a couple of amendments and typos, a couple of which were identified yesterday, and a couple more as well. First of all, in for Chapter 1, for the Section 42 report, on page 4, at 6.4.2, should read 36A, not 35A. I'd ask that that be amended. On the same page, at 6.4.3, where it refers to delegations, that should read designations. And that is repeated in the paragraph immediately underneath that as well.
So the, also the title 6.4.3. Sorry,
yes, please.
Yes. Thank you.
For Chapter 5, Section 42, Appendix 1, which is the revised chapter, page 5.2, under the bold heading Naitahu Environmental Management, Pakapano Natanga, there's an erroneous K, the second K should be struck out.
I'm sorry, I must clear that box. That's in your Chapter 5, Section 42A report. Is that correct?
Appendix 1.
Appendix 1.
Yesterday, that was initially put in as reference 5, not meaning 5 in the management plan.
So just take the 5 out?
Yes, please. Well, sorry, it should be included as that reference to the footnote.
Ah, I've got it, you've got it.
Got it. those are the typos and amendments I'm regretting to be in this place. But now I'd like to highlight the following key points from my Section 42A report as follows. Chapter 1, Introduction. The approach of many planning documents now seeks to refine their content to a comparatively low level, simplify and streamline. This is true of the introductory matters, which I consider to be a valid part of the district plan, but in my experience can wander from relevant matters into lengthy and unnecessary descriptive text. Consequently, the proposed district plan's introduction chapter has been written to contain enough information for any user without any unnecessary commentary. This chapter is purposely minimal and seeks to achieve a balance between the amount of reference to the RMA and readability for all users. Each subsequent chapter also has its own stated purpose, and with the overriding strategic direction chapter offering further insight, I've sought to avoid duplication where I consider it reasonable to do so. This slimmed down chapter is proposed to replace two chapters in the operative district plan, UMP, which are the introduction and the information and interpretation chapters. Recent amendments to the full schedule of the RMA have also introduced a more detailed list of matters that applicants are required to assess and include. These and the consent team's approach to producing guidance and templated application forms removes the need to duplicate those requirements in this chapter of the plan. A summary of the key issues covered in the chapter is as follows. Firstly, the relationship with other planning documents. The provision to direct and encourage users to refer to national and regional planning documents has been extended in response to submissions. Although this information is present within the RMA, I have considered that it would be helpful to include some more specific information, despite the minor level of duplication. Consultation. The PDP should not contradict the RMA, and this was highlighted in a submission regarding consultation. The phrase "may need," present in the ODP, could be construed as a requirement to consult, which is not a requirement of the RMA. I have recommended that "may need" be replaced with an encouragement to consult. Additional information for designations. Again, in response to a submission, the level of detail required to be submitted for an application for a designation notice of requirement was reassessed. With adequate levels of detail being specifically identified within the RMA, the low frequency of such applications and the likelihood of such applications being submitted by anyone other than the professional planner, I consider the deletion of the provision to be appropriate. Building high costs. Requests were made to retain existing provisions from the ODB for the requirement of these planning tools to aid in the assessment of a proposal against its surrounding environment. The key provision is this that should remain a matter for council's discretion, allowing their use across any zone if they are considered to be informative in the assessment of any application. At this stage, I'm happy to take your questions on Chapter 1, or would you prefer I went through Chapter 5 and took the questions all together?
It might be easier if we deal with Chapter 1, I think, first.
Okay, thank you.
In which case I'll carry on with the building outline. This plan is different from the operative plan in that it specifies the activities that are allowed, whether permitted, restricted, discretionary, etc. Just wondering whether, without providing for this as a permitted temporary activity subject to conditions, the erection of height poles may be the erection of structures contrary to the plan provisions.
It's not something I've considered.
Maybe something Mr. Winchester might put in mind to. And if it were a temporary activity with conditions, then that submission about the timing of them could be one of the standards that has to be met.
Thank you, sir. I'll look into that further and make sure that's addressed and applied, please.
Can I just add to that, just in terms of how it refers to when the application until the council has completed the application, I just imagine the scenario potentially where if it was appealed, these things would then remain until it's determined by the environment court, should it only be in terms of the council's determination. Just issues like that, those could be addressed.
Yes. I'll give a more considered approach later, but I do know the definition of building in the proposed plan in the definition section provides that it shall have the same meaning as in the Building Act with the following exemptions, and specifically building profile poles required as part of the notification of resource consent applications. So there is an express exclusion, but I'm not sure necessarily what further limitations there are on that standard.
Yes, I'm just, it may not be a building, but it may still be a structure.
That's
certainly be used. Mr. Chair, the question I have was just on, is it actually correct to be saying completed the application or completed this assessment?
The hearing commissioners often need them for their site visit. So it's to the point where the application has been heard.
It's a hearing rather than the
application. My intention is that they are there as long as they're required. And if that process is beyond the normal consent application through to appeal, they are still useful and they should remain.
The other question I have is on page 1-5. In your revised section 1.6.1.4 on consultation, I think you need to do a bit of work on the grammar there. You commence the sentence, the section while section 36A, and while is a conjunction, but we don't have, we have a separate sentence after it instead of a conjoined sentence.
Work on some improvements.
Yes, thank you. Commissioner St. Clair, do you have any other questions?
Were you here when we asked quite a few questions of Mr. Winchester?
Yes.
And Scott? I'd be interested in your response to some of the same ones. So on still on 1-5, there, just those, the national and regional rules, I have questions in there about there not being rules within regional plans. Regional policy statements, rather, just potentially, do you think that needs tightening up in terms of that 1.6.11?
It could definitely be tidied up. The intention of this section is to achieve that balance between being word perfect for everybody who is a professional planner and understanding that a rule means a specific thing. Rules here is meant, is used in its plain English term. I mean, rules to the lay user are the same as regulation and directives, they mean the same thing. But if that's likely to cause confusion, then certainly replace the rule.
Should we use provisions? They are national and regional provisions. Because we have two sorts of national instruments. National policy statements and national environmental standards, and then we have two sorts of regional instruments.
Could we revise the provisions? I'm just wondering if the lay user would find the same as rules, regulations, directives.
I think a lay user would have fallen asleep by the time they got to this section. to be honest, it's not, I'm not okay. Against the...
Even though they're only on page 5.
It's a bit depressing, why are we all here?
Nothing against the wording that you've used, Mr. Pickard, but I doubt that the lay user would even refer to this chapter very frequently.
Fair point, Mr. Chairman. That is the point of condensing this chapter.
I don't have anything further other than if you're able to work with Council to just provide us with some, maybe some simplified or whatever wording for that and any other parts that we've introduced to yesterday, that would be fine.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Can we stay on 1611? Suggest that other things you might look at are the last two sentences. These additional high-level provisions will be referred to where practicable to do so. And I wonder, what was the intention underlying that?
The idea is really just drawing the user's attention to other documents and other provisions they need to be aware of or which are, will affect any of their applications. The wording, looking at it in total, could be improved.
All right. So let's just suggest that perhaps if you could consider the, what you were trying to achieve with the last two sentences. I discussed with Mr. Winchester yesterday whether it might help the reader if some of the text from the subdivision chapter would move forward into chapter 1 to explain what the role of this plan versus the operative plan is. I think he came round to the view that perhaps it was a minor change, if it was just a matter of shifting existing text. As a planning issue, do you think it might be helpful to the reader? If they had fallen asleep by 1.5, I suspect by the time they've reached chapter 27, that's all a bit much.
In my opinion, is that that information is best kept outside of the chapter, simply because the proposed district plan being stated and the operative district plan with plan changes and appeals to it presents a very complex situation for all users, and maybe that we need to refer to that outside this document if we refer in here to where things sit. I think from yesterday's comments we soon be out of date and we'll need updating constantly.
I suppose the question I put to you is, well, accepting that point, if you have to update chapter 27 for the same reason, what's the difference?
I'm not familiar with 27, so I would need to read what provisions are there.
Okay, we'll leave that. In terms of the consultation discussion, while of course you're absolutely right on recording what section 36A is, I think your council also accepted yesterday that at one level the original wording saying may need accurately captured the position, because in practice, particularly with toned whenua issues, if you don't consult, you don't understand the issues, you don't address the effects. So the question for you is, while I don't have a particular problem, subject to what anyone else may say, about recording what section 36A says, would it be helpful to the reader to say that, that they may need, in practice, there's both a legal and a practical issue here. They may need in practice to consult.
I wouldn't have any objection to that conclusion.
Thank you, that was all I had.
Commissioner Couch Lewis, do you have any questions on this trip?
I'm just sitting in on practice. Because even though hearing from legal submission, I accept under consultation that there is no contradiction there between your the introduction and the Tangata Whenua chapter in terms of the consultation objective. It's the word elects that has more offence to me that I'm looking at this one. Tossing up that elects and the suggestion that has been made. Mr. Bigger, I need to go. Can you look at it in the time it had been all one? I'm happy to move on, I think.
Okay. Yeah. Now, just a question about the on page 1.4 under status of activity 1.6.9. Just notice one of the submitters, numbers 243, talked about why not putting a bit in there to explain when a controlled activity would not be run. You've said you don't need to do that, it's not for efficiency. Just want to explain, confirm that that's your still why we don't need it. She suggests the claim must grant the resource consent unless it has insufficient information to determine whether or not the activity is controlled activity.
I recall the submission. I come back to that balance, what's useful and what is too much.
Okay.
I think in that case, if we were to add in my response in Appendix 2 to that submission, it wouldn't make that paragraph controlled activity is any less efficient. I would be happy to include it if you think it would
have value. Oh, I just wanted to hear what you said, but I'll think about it. Yeah, thank you.
Just following on from that point, though, I'm just wondering whether there might be a linkage between that section and 1.7 to make it clear that in all activity statuses where there's discretion, the lack of information can be reason to decline a consent. So you say in 172 that if there's insufficient, it'll be requested and be on hold until it's dealt with. That's true to a certain point, but it's not on hold indefinitely.
No.
And then there's also the provision in section 104 that insufficient information can be grounds for refusing consent. I think that needs to be linked through there more clearly.
For it out the
answer.
For it out the answer.
Mm.
So to add that at the end of 1.7.2.
Well, I think there needs to be linkage between the two places. You say they can be, you know, even with restrictive discretionary and discretionary and non-complying, you say they can be refused or granted, but I think the lack of information should be noted there as reasons for them to be declined as well.
I could certainly regret that to show that.
Can we please go back to 1.6.14, Mr. Picard? I share some concerns already expressed. My main concern actually being that it we look like we're discouraging consultation rather than encouraging consultation, and that's partly because we only refer to what we might save in terms of costs as opposed to what we might improve as with regard to results. And I think it's incumbent on us actually as a council to encourage consultations, because there have probably been more examples where it's helped the result than not. Perhaps getting rid of the grammatical issue of the first two sentences might give us an opportunity to make that more encouraging rather than starting off with a negative. Then we have the appropriate level of a consultation may depend on matters such as the effects or impacts. I don't really see there's a big difference between effects and impacts. They tend to be pretty correlative. And I'm wondering if there is something else that you might put in as the second branch of that may depend on matters or otherwise make it a singular. Then the next sentence, the process of consultation, if pursued, allows people to understand. If we could take the if pursued out, then it just makes it less of a unlikely thing to happen. And if we could somehow get something positive in there instead of just reducing time delays and costs, I think that would help. And the
I think, Mr. Pickard, there may be value in pointing out in that section that good consultation may lead to written approval from affected parties, and thereby potentially avoiding notification. I mean, that is a critical factor in consultation and a benefit for applicants. And for the council, but it's worthwhile, I think, encouraging consultation just on that basis.
Yeah. I agree. I think we should go in there with a positive eye rather than a negative eye. The next one, I hear that you have accepted it. I just want to push it a little bit further, and this is perhaps because of my ignorance rather than anything else. You say special consultation procedures may apply. Is there anywhere where they must apply? I.e., is there anywhere where these special consultative procedures with tangata whenua are compulsory?
No.
No, okay. Thank you. I think then we could maybe just make it a little clearer. The last sentence in that para, an application is advised to refer to any consultation documents or iwi management plans which the council may have available. I thought we, A, had to have iwi management plans available, and B, consultation documents is a fairly kind of broad term. Is that just referring to tangata whenua? Is it referring to a broader form of consultation document? What is or might be that consultation document? Or are we just trying to cover a plethora of maybes that should either be wiped or made more specific? Because looking at that, I think, oh, holy hell, I don't really want to go because I might find there are 10.
The intention of the consultation document is that there may be cultural impact assessments or other information which is already out there for the same area or the same development or similar, some work which has already been done with the intention.
I don't get that from it, so.
Just given that there have been a fair few comments on that particular paragraph, I would aim to go away and provide a new draft.
Thank you. That'd be great.
And looking at that new draft, because I didn't accept the inclusion of elites, I'm still looking at the tangata whenua chapter in terms of 8.1 and the balance that you are seeking there in relation to consultation. I think that the two, however, I agree with my fellow commissioner, though, if it could be more written in a more positive note. Just thinking of my own experience in terms of whether one would elect to or not, and why I have objection to the word yet, if they're in knowing that the intention of this chapter, the introduction chapter, is to encourage and to inform, to ensure that it is user-friendly for the rest of the plan. You are setting an example here in consultation as to how they should view the Tangata Whenua chapter or going into the additional chapters in terms of looking at the rules within the additional chapter. I don't think this is productive right up there at the top. And you're wanting them to filter down and work in the Tangata Whenua. I see that more as being down in the rules than I would normally see in the proposed plan.
I will say that. I'll consider that when I redraft it.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. We can move on to chapter 5.
Thank you. Chapter 5, Tangata Whenua. The need for and the desire to work with Māori in plan making is becoming more commonplace and, in my opinion, greatly improves the overall decision-making process. My report details how the fractured provisions in the OVP have been collated into one main chapter. I note that this does not restrict the integration of Māori values throughout the PDP, but in my opinion facilitates it. Chapter 5 is an extension of a strategic goal, strategic direction in Chapter 3, specifically Goal 7, that in turn assists in demonstrating how QLDC acts in accordance with the principles of the Treaty of Waitangi. The process to arrive at the proposed chapter has included working closely with the two resource management units, Kaitahu Ki Otago and Te Omawarai Incorporated, over a period of 2 years. It is acknowledged that it is unlikely to be 100% alignment in the outcome because of the differing view. But the growing relationships will assist users of the plan and the Tangata Whenua representatives. Also, council staff will have an improved understanding of local Māori values and the types of development that may affect them. Many Māori terms are not easily translated into plain English, and this is further complicated where planning phraseology is allowed to intervene. Wahi tupuna, cultural or sometimes ancestral landscape, is an example of this, as is Kaitiakitanga. These terms, in my opinion, can be used in a very wide context in the Maori world, whereas plans seek to define them for simplicity. I have included references in this chapter as well as chapter 1 to the amended requirements for assessment details from all applicants. These are very clearly worded to include the need to consider part 2 of the RMA. Cultural matters feature heavily within those sections 5 to 8. Users of the PDP can refer to chapter 5 and in turn can identify the appropriate EU management plans for even more assistance. To summarise the key issues, Goal 7, Strategic Directions. This goal is vital to the Tangata Whenua chapter, and the requested changes to this through submissions to the Strategic Directions chapter have meant that a re-evaluation was required. To require the unqualified protection of all things related to Tangata Whenua does not align well with the RMA. The recommended change to recognise and provide for does, and still allows for the policy framework as proposed for the Tangata Whenua chapter to remain valid. Consultation and mapping. Representatives of Tangata Whenua have been engaged in the PDP process for some time. It was identified very early in the process that engagement in QLDC was low and that there were areas for improvement. Through this process, I have also learned that there will always be difficulties in trying to place an area associated with Māori values onto two-dimensional mapping. Even the respective Takiwā showed in the EU management plans
allow that there are links and shared interests across mapped areas. I've mapped the sites and areas that are detailed in the Ngāi-Tahu Claims Settlement Act to show that there are more than just the statutory areas that QLDC are obliged to include. And these are on map sheet number 40. The sheet shows areas of cultural significance, which are identified in the NCCSA, but are also elements of the cultural landscape that the PDP refers to as Te Onga or Wahingtupuna. These elements of the wider cultural landscape are, however, not exhaustive, and Tangata Whenua have agreed to provide further identification of sites and landscapes this year. This will greatly assist users of the PDP by excluding areas of little or no interest to Tangata Whenua and providing statements of significance and risk to Maori values from differing types of development that may affect sites that are of significance. I acknowledge that that work will need to undergo a due process, but that the policies that are included now relate to those cultural elements that are already included, and the policies will accommodate further additions. The sites of significance for Maori that I've just mentioned will be added to the inventory in Chapter 26 of the proposed district plan, for which there is currently an empty section. That will be more suited to the method of providing a statement of significance, identifying the risks and threats to each from different types of development. If there were changes to the PDP, my understanding is that it would be to that chapter and not Chapter 5. Mana Whenua. The importance of the correct Maori terminology is vital to the chapter and through the wider PDP. A submission raised the request to use Mana Whenua in preference to Tangata Whenua. There are subtleties to this change which may not be apparent to non-Maori and will be best debated fully in this forum in the hearing. In my opinion, there should be standardisation across planning documents where practicable, and I recommend that Tangata Whenua is retained. And note that the submission comes from KDKO and that TAMI did not make the same request, hence my reluctance to recommend the change. Involvement of iwi and iwi management plans. I consider that the RMA promotes involvement of Tangata Whenua in decision making. This can be through a number of methods, such as good consultation processes, engagement and education from to both council and Tangata Whenua. Iwi management plans are an important tool in this process, although they may not be easily copied and pasted into district plans. I'm very happy to take your questions.
Commissioner Cutlers, would you like to...
First of all, I'd just like to congratulate the council at, on this chapter, looking at putting a chapter up in a strategic area that gives an indication to a planning meter in terms of looking for certainty when working with mana whenua within the area. Just again going back to the consultation process that I had gone through the looked at the proposed plan and looked at the operative plan and looked across in terms of the issues that are facing Mana Whenua that are important to them. So the questions that I have are more in terms of the importance that's been placed on the rewrite and has the operative plan been reflected in the proposed plan in terms of water issues, water, the water quality issues, the degrading of different sites. Do you have just a view in terms of your view of the rewrite and condensing it down into these objectives?
Very much part of the approach to putting this chapter together was to look at how the provisions in the ODP were fragmented. Statutory knowledge and were hidden under a loose part of the front of the plan. And in chapter 4, section 4, the rest of the reference to the packet centre wasn't there. His thought by bringing this to the fore, bringing the chapter to one particular place, it forms the base for the rest of the plan to refer back to. And through individual chapters, they will refer where necessary back to that base.
Okay, so given that then, the main goal, 5.4.1, then is consultation. But I note that from the proposed plan, the policies that you have there, and looking over at the operative plan, where the importance of consultation is really important to addressing all the issues around Kaitiakitanga and looking at their role and Maitahu's role at looking after the whenua and the water. I know you said you're going to look at the rewrite in the first, in chapter one. I'm just wanting to emphasise that this policy you have put up as the top one, that consultation is important, and yet you are asking people to elect whether or not they actually consult. And I also wonder if that also gives certainty to users that there could be, you're putting them up to failure because they may elect not to, which means as legal, the legal submission said yesterday, that if they don't, the consequences are higher. Then I'm suggesting that with the hierarchy here of 5.41, that it's critical to everything in terms of that Kaitiakitanga role and how it actually sits. Would you agree to that? What is your view on my analysis looking across?
I think it's very intentionally worded to promote consultation as opposed to requiring that consultation. And I think the consultation, along with the policy here, is supported by methods outside the plan of the ongoing engagements and that relationship building, being more informed from the team that process resource consents, give them a better understanding. That way, the consultation is important. So I acknowledge that the consultation with Tangata Whenua is important. I think we need to stay with the promotion of that, the encouragement of that consultation. I don't think we can require it.
Mr. Picard, just looking at that objective, the objective is to promote consultation. Then when one looks at the policies that follow from that, nowhere does it encourage an applicant to consult, which I would have thought was fundamental as part of the promotion of consultation. It certainly puts some onus on the council to consult,